listening to the Modern Web Podcast, where we explore next generation frameworks, standards, and techniques. I'm Tracy Lee at Lady Lee on Twitter, and you can find us online at modern-web.org. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Modern Web Podcast. Today we have the Ionic team and Ben Lesh, who's going to be interviewing. So Adam and Brandy, do you guys want to go ahead and just introduce yourselves real quick? Tell us what you're up to.
Sure. Yeah. My name's Adam Bradley. I work on the Ionic framework. The lead developer there, and I've been working on it for the last couple of years and absolutely loving it.
Cool. Can we find you on Twitter anywhere?
Yes. Adam D. Bradley.
Perfect. And then Brandy, what about you?
Hey, my name's Brandy Carney, and I've been working on the Ionic framework with Adam, and I've been on it for the past year.
Very cool. And where can we find you on the internet?
My Twitter is Brandy S. Carney.
Awesome. And Ben is... Who are you, Ben?
It's a good question. I work at Netflix. I'm a senior software engineer here at Netflix. And I'm also the lead contributor on RxJS 5, so, which is a dependency of Angular 2. That's how we're related. I think that makes us cousins, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Awesome. Yeah, so let's start off. Actually, Tracy had a really good question.
Yeah, so is Ionic 2 with Angular 2 ready for production?
Very soon. So that's like, it's always a tough thing to say right now because Angular 2 is still in release candidate. So I'm hesitant to say that, like, yeah, it's ready to go when, you know, Angular 2 themselves is breaking things per day. But that said, they're about ready to go to their release, their full release here soon. And so we're in our beta 9, should be releasing beta 10 this week. And the goal is to have our first release candidate within the month or even sooner. So is it production ready? I would say once we get the offline template compiling working, which basically means that the startup will be a lot faster and also the file sizes will be a lot smaller, then it will be, yes. We already have a lot of people that are using it today. With their one complaint being that the startup time is too slow, which is kind of a solved problem. It's just that we haven't gotten the Angular CLI and the Ionic CLI tooling, figuring out the offline template compiling yet. But once that's done, then absolutely it's production ready.
And do you have any big clients sort of testing it out right now?
We actually have quite a few that have are either transitioning right now or have already like started to move it over. But then there's even more that I'd love to say that I can't for legal reasons. But yeah, there's actually quite a few that are transitioning to Ionic 2 right now. But no real big flagship that I can like that is in the App Store that I can show off at the moment.
For legal reasons, do you mean that you would incriminate these people?
I don't know. They've asked us not to say. So there's it's surprising how that works. There's quite a few companies that say not to say that. So. However that works, I'll respect their wishes.
And also, just to add to the production-ready question, we're really happy with how the API is, and we don't really plan on making major API changes until at least we get to release candidate.
Yeah. So we've just kind of, this last beta is really going to have the last remaining breaking changes. But after that, we're really kind of solidified where we're at. So Brandy's absolutely right. I think we've kind of hit that point now that we're ready for release candidate.
Awesome. So now that you've gone this, so you've technically developed Ionic twice now, is that correct? Like you've
yeah.
done it once for Angular 1 and now you're doing it again for Angular 2.
Basically.
Was there anything that you learned from the first development of Ionic that you were able to apply more effectively in the redevelopment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of it... Well, with Ionic 1, we had a lot of constraints because the main phone at the time was Android 2.3. It was just starting to be Android 4.0, which I'm not sure if everyone is aware, but that was a pretty bad phone or a pretty bad web development experience on those phones. And then also iOS 6 was the main thing. So we only had, you know, had a very limited set of kind of modern APIs that we could use. And because of that, we had to resort to using JavaScript scrolling, which means that we weren't able to use just the native scrolling that the browser provides, which on iOS never really had an issue. It could, you know, JavaScript scroll all day. It was Android that traditionally had the issue with JavaScript scrolling, mainly because they didn't have request animation frame in there, and so I had to use a timeout. And so there's lots of drawbacks to what Ionic 1 had to resort to because of the phones at the time. But that also taught us a lot of lessons of like, where are the issues and the bottlenecks with Ionic. And so like with Ionic 2, really Android 4.4 and above is widely used. iOS is updated, you know, like if you look at the stats, iOS is, I think it's like 90% are already at iOS 9 and iOS 10 is coming out soon. So iOS has never had a problem with updating. So I guess the biggest thing has been time has been on our side here. And we've been able to take advantage of all the awesome work that the standards have allowed us to take advantage of. So with that, I'd say the biggest difference would have to be the scrolling performance and then the transition performance, because we've also been able to take a lot of advantage of animations and using the wheel change property. And I kind of just learning more about how, like, really get into the details of how every single framework works and how to make sure we're doing DOM reads and writes at the right time. And also, we've been really fortunate to work with Mishko on a weekly basis of him helping us out with Angular 2, and has also drastically helped us to make sure that we're building it the correct way. Whereas with Ionic 1, you know, we were able to Google, like, well, how do you do this in Angular 1? And there's a lot of answers. But now you Google and you have something that's outdated because it was written yesterday. So we have that going for us too.
All right. So. With Ionic 2, and I know we just talked about Android 3 being maybe not the best web platform to develop against, and I think during that time period, a lot of people kind of moved away from using like web views and web technology to develop native apps for Android in particular, but I think other platforms as well. You know, I guess what do you think about that? Does that concern you at all? That a lot of companies have kind of they bought into the let's develop for the web everywhere, and then they are kind of like moving back. Like I know that Netflix and Facebook notably like moved back to doing native apps, and now Facebook has like, you know, React Native and that sort of thing. But it seems like there is a movement away from using web technologies on the mobile platform. Like, what do you think about that, you know, looking at Ionic 2's future?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, with all the stats that we have, we're kind of seeing the exact opposite. I think it's more of what works best for the organization and kind of what we've always seen. You know, we've been doing this for 3 years. We've got plenty of stats on our NPM downloads. And still to this day, we're seeing at least or roughly 5,000 downloads per day. Just week alone, we had 50,000 downloads of our CLI. So that's every single day. So, and if you look at our stats over the last 3 year, it just continues to grow. So from my, you know, point of view, I think it's kind of a, depends on the organization and what works for them. But absolutely, I think jumping ship on the web views right now and moving to something else is kind of a bad time for that. Cause you know, with progressive web apps coming out, actually becoming a practical thing with evergreen browsers and how the devices today are actually very, very fast. And we're kind of proving that with Ionic 2, but it's how well we can make these native feeling apps on the web. Again, you know, like it's up to the organization and whatever works for them. And like you said, you know, 3 years ago, phones were drastically different. You know, people did fight with Android 2.3 and we fought with it. But at the same time, we had over 2 million apps that were created with Ionic 1, and we're still amongst the top 50 repos in all of GitHub. So we're really proud of where Ionic 1 went. It's just that Ionic 2 is just, we've been able to take advantage of so much more. So to answer your question is, you know, we don't personally see the shift from going from WebView back to native. We kind of see the exact opposite. But, you know, all the above, I think both solutions work for depending on the team and developers you have.
Right on. Well, so I just mentioned React Native, right?
Yep.
What do both of you think of React Native? Have either one of you used it recently or tried it out?
Yeah, I've toyed around with it a little bit, and I think it's a pretty awesome project. I mean, it's for sure, it's great. You know, like we have used it, we've played around with it, and I think it's pretty cool. But I think the difference between React Native and Ionic is kind of the individual who's going to be building it. With React Native, it requires more of a, you know, a software engineer and a large team with a lot of experience doing so. And with Ionic, it's, you know, web developers, web designers can easily step in. And I think kind of a and something that's that we hear a lot and we kind of see a lot with Ionic is that, you know, any company, you walk into any company and they're going to have a web development department or a web designer, web developer that is able to just look at the code and know exactly how it works. And we put a lot of time into that, making sure that Ionic 2 is very, or Ionic in general, is very easy to use. And so that web developers, web designers can, oh, that's HTML, that's CSS. This is how it's going to work. Or I can right-click and inspect element and change the font size. You know, they give them all the using the existing skills they already have. So with React Native, you kind of lose a lot of that. But again, I think it's up to the organization. I think React Native is a great solution. But with Ionic 2, you can build things just... you know, just as easily, just as fast. And also regarding React Native, for sure it's a great project, but it's also kind of an old idea come new again. I mean, you've had AppCelerator, Titanium, Xamarin, was AppGyver, Steroids. These are all kind of things that have been around for years now, well before Ionic ever existed. But yet still people have gravitated towards using, you know, Ionic and HTML over these other solutions that kind of do transpile to the different languages. So I think there's room for both. I think it also like validates that this is an awesome space to be in, and there's lots of different options to go with. And it kind of comes down to just the organization and what they feel most comfortable with.
So as a beginner, I didn't actually know that Ionic had a CLI, and that really excites me. So, you know, Brandy, what's your favorite part about the CLI? Like, what would you say for beginners is one of the most amazing things about your CLI?
So to me, I think that being able to just write a command to start an app, and you can use any of our starters. We have a tab starters, a blink starter, a side menu starter, and you can just write Ionic start, tabs, my app, and just create an app with everything ready to go. All you have to do is run other commands, Ionic serve, Ionic run iOS, and it'll build the app and start a web browser. Ionic serve does. I think that's probably one of the best things, but one of the new things with Ionic 2 is the generate command. And basically you can say Ionic generate page, then the name of the page, and it'll add a new page to your project. So you don't even have to make a new directory, new files. It just adds, like, everything for you.
That's awesome. How long has the CLI been around?
Since the beginning, really. Yeah, I think it's... I think we came up with it probably a month after we released the framework. So it's been around for quite a while.
Huh, interesting. How long is that, by the way? Like,
since...
2-3 years?
3 years. I think November 2013?
Now. Yeah, and if has it... correctly. So let me see. So Ember CLI has been around for a while. Was Ember CLI any level of inspiration for the Ionic CLI?
I think recently, though, they've been referencing the Ember CLI.
If I recall, I believe it was Max that was inspired by Heroku.
Yes.
And we wanted to do something like that.
Yeah, the Ember generate component,
yep, sure,
or Ember generate route are, yeah. So, I mean.
I think that's where the idea came from.
Oh, very, very, very cool. Well, cool. Brandy, we'll have to like pair on it sometime. You'll have to help me set up my first Ionic app. I saw Jeff doing the Angular CLI and doing the Dash mobile, which really excited me, but I'm kind of sad I can't create something.
Oh my God, if you guys do that, I want to sit in.
I will definitely help.
As long as I can watch. Cuz I'm interested. I want to see that work.
Yeah, of course.
All right, awesome. Awesome. So with the CLI then, it's totally standalone. It doesn't require Angular CLI at all?
No. We've been working with Igor and the team for quite a while now on the CLI. And one thing we're making sure of is that, well, really, I mean, it's an inner command line interface, right? It's just an interface to a bunch of other code. We're all using the same code that we're going to be running from. So like all of Angular CLI is kind of built off of other modules it depends on. The biggest one being the NGC, so Angular compiler. And that's the one we're getting hooked up right now. It still has some stuff to get worked out. And yeah, again, we're working with the team right now to make sure that it works great with Ionic and also Mater Design and all the various ones. So it's going to be pretty much just like Angular CLI, but we want to make sure that we had full control of everything. We don't want to make it, it's not going to be anything different than what people are familiar with. But really, we already have a very large user base of the CLI. Like I said, 5,000 downloads a day for the last 3 years. So we don't want to disrupt that whole ecosystem either. So we want to make sure that they're happying with what they're used to.
It's cool. So now that, okay, so Ionic 2 obviously targets Angular 2. Angular 2 is written in TypeScript. Is Ionic 2 also written in TypeScript?
Yes, it is definitely written in TypeScript.
Yeah. What do you, Brandy, what do you think of TypeScript?
I think it's easier to write. It's easier to find mistakes whenever you're writing it. And it just makes sense to me.
Yeah. Have you found mistakes? So I asked because I converted RxJS 5 from ES6 to TypeScript, and I found all sorts of horrible things I was doing that I didn't really realize I was doing.
Oh, yeah, especially adding a TypeScript linter. We've found so many errors that we've had to fix.
Yeah, it's definitely been a... my original, I think, was it 2010? When did TypeScript come out? When it first came out, I was like, oh, what is this junk? Are you serious? Microsoft is trying to destroy the JavaScript language. So I kind of had that opinion for a little while. And then as Angular 2 came out, I was like, okay, let's give this a shot. We'll write it in JavaScript for a while. And then more people requesting that we had the correct types in Ionic 2. And so like, okay, fine, we'll convert to TypeScript. And I wish we would have done it so much sooner, you know, since I was kind of like hesitant to begin with. And now to me now it's complete 180 where it's like, wow, I don't know how we ever coded without TypeScript. It is, I forget who said it. But they said that like TypeScript is like, basically JavaScript, but with a seatbelt on. And I think that's a great way to describe it, where it's like, it really does like kind of, guard what you're working on. And also what's also strange is I come from a C# background, so I don't know why I didn't like it from the beginning. But when we converted all of Ionic 2 over to TypeScript, we found so many things wrong with, like, that would have been a runtime error. This is returning the wrong value. It wouldn't have worked because it was a string. It was wouldn't have expected the PX inside of that string. You know, so there's lots of little things that we caught. And so I'm absolutely glad that we do have that. And even if developers don't want to use TypeScript at all, you know, sure, that's okay. You can do that. But us personally, we would use TypeScript just for our own development of Ionic 2.
I'm a big fan. That it's TypeScript is coding JavaScript with a seatbelt on. because I was actually the person that made that up.
Did you? Well, all right. So I'll quote you out. It was to Ben Leash.
That's right. I actually invented the semicolon as well. So there's that.
Awesome.
I thought of a question for Tracy. Tracy, have you actually used TypeScript before?
I have used TypeScript. Yes. But so my problem when I code is sometimes I see all these errors and I just think, well, you know, they're there. Right. So whenever people, you know, whenever I run into a problem and I start having somebody like, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm stuck on something. They're like, okay, look at these four errors.
Right.
You know, TypeScript's trying to tell you something. So.
Well, there's two ways to fix the errors. And one is to go through and put a lot of deep thought into what could be causing the error. And the other way is just to use type everything as any.
Yeah. I heard that's a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, actually, Patrick J.S., he said with TypeScript, because I wasn't looking at the errors, he's like, hey, would you drive a car without a GPS? Because that's kind of what you're doing.
I just realized Patrick's going to have to change his middle name to Thomas or something so it can be Patrick T.S. instead of Patrick J.S.
Clever. He'll always be Patrick J.S.
At least, at the very least, he didn't become a React developer like Kent Chimichanga Dodds, because then he would have to change his last name to like Stapleton Xavier or something like that in order to get the whole thing out.
Yeah, Patrick is great. He's got so many great resources that, you know, has helped us learn Angular 2 also.
I actually think it's really interesting how Microsoft purchasing LinkedIn, and then LinkedIn having such a huge Ember team, and then Tilda working with LinkedIn so heavily, and Glimmer being written in TypeScript. It's like, oh my God, is Ember all of a sudden going to be written in TypeScript, Ember 3.0 or something? I don't know.
You know, actually, Yehuda Katz has been posting on Twitter quite frequently about TypeScript recently, so it's plausible that could happen.
I mean, I would totally say, like, even if it's not for the community to use or to help develop with, just them personally, I think it would help them build a project, a large-scale project.
Yeah. So guys, what's coming down the pipe for Ionic? What's Ionic's biggest concern coming down the road? Like what hurdles do you have and what are you looking forward to releasing?
I'd say, so to get to production ready, like I was saying, like our beta is getting done. I think the biggest hurdle we have right now is the offline template compiler. And Josh Thomas, who's on our team here, has been working with Rob and the CLI team quite a bit to get that last hurdle done. But what's really exciting, though, is that when we have this offline template compiling, where it's basically like raw DOM manipulation code that's not asynchronous and requesting the templates and what else, basically immediate startup times, and then couple that with Angular Universal, where you're able to just like paint that HTML as fast as it can download and then fire it up later on with actual Angular 2. Those are the stuff that really excites me, that Ionic 2 is going to be just blazing fast with these capabilities. And then even being able to, like, you know, serve it from the website. So I guess those are my answers of like what I think is I'm really excited about and the next steps, which are not that far away.
Right on. What would be what's the nightmare scenario for Ionic though? What is there anything that could happen that would just ruin your day?
I would say router never getting finished.
Router 4 gets published. I don't know.
Everything breaking.
Yeah, I've been.
So what you're saying is it would be really mean of me to go and like meet with some friends on the Angular team and be like, I have this new idea for a router. It's going to be amazing.
Yes, we would be so upset.
Yes. It's going to use callbacks this time, and it's going to. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Well, I do have a PayPal account, so we can probably prevent that.
Okay. Well. All right. No, yeah, the router has been a long sought after road. You know, it's been going on 2.5 years now that we've been kind of adjusting to the new router. So soon, hopefully it like finally settles down, and I think it is. We've gotten reassurances from Mishko himself, so I think we're good to go in the next month or two.
It's the bee's knees.
Yes. It is pretty cool. I haven't toyed around with it. It's pretty neat.
I don't know. I don't know if I trust reassurances from Mishko.
That's true.
he's probably not listening right now anyway.
No comment. He's in Spain.
So, all right. So now let's... This is seriously the most important question I'm going to ask you probably today. What's more impressive, Jeff Cross's beard or David East's Ollie skills? Now keep in mind that I'm going to have to hear from both of you, and these guys are very competitive with one another. So,
Adam, go ahead.
Well, okay, so both those guys are very impressive all by themselves. So I would say I've been keeping up on the East feed of all the different Ollie skills, and he's been getting better. It's been very impressive, but I'm going to have to say, hands down, it's the beard of Cross that's just amazing.
But do you interact with Jeff Cross's beard on Twitter? Has he ever tweeted at you? Are you that?
No,
special?
I haven't had the privilege. No.
Oh man.
I think I've been in the same tweet, but I don't think he has talked with me.
One of our friends, Sam, he actually never directly tweets at Jeff Cross now. He says he only goes through his intermediary.
Well, you have to. Yeah. That's how Jeff would like it.
All right, Brandy.
All right. So I'm going to go with David East's Ollie skills because I feel like he needs his own Twitter account for it.
Yeah. It is rather impressive.
Yes.
I wonder if he could actually Ollie Jeff Cross's beard.
Maybe.
Can we do that?
I want to see that.
Can we do that for like a video cast?
Yeah. We should do that at the next Angular event.
That would be
great.
Have
David East come in and Ollie over Jeff's face. Yes. Sounds like a great idea. Yeah.
Nothing could go wrong.
Well, I'm sure after the Google attorneys are involved, we'll have it all.
He'd practice a lot. Or we could just shave Jeff Cross's beard off and then just have it.
Uh-oh.
Hey, it could be a standalone.
Maybe.
What would happen?
They might be related. Like if you shave off Jeff Cross's beard, maybe David East's Ollie skills go away.
That sounds amazing.
It's like a Samson thing.
Sounds like the best meetup ever.
Okay, but seriously though, I'm buying a beard now.
Oh.
So that David East can Ollie over it. No joke. Well, this is happening.
Or just he could wear a beard.
See, this is the worst. Whenever I talk to Ben, weird things come up. Like Ben told me once that he about Jello wrestling, and I was like, oh my God, you are thumb wrestling Jeff Cross.
in Jell-O.
Don't ask me why I brought this up. I did. But.
It's pretty bad to give me amazing ideas because they actually start happening.
So wildly inappropriate. So we're tied 1-1 with that.
Yeah. Well, what's your guys' answer?
I can't answer because both of them would not like me if I answered. So it's important. Tracy, do you have an answer?
I'm gonna stay politically correct, just like you.
Yeah, we're just officiating.
Although Adam and Brandy, basically, you guys know, if you want something from one or the other, now you're gonna have to team up and, because Brandy, I don't think Jeff Cross's beard is ever gonna talk to you again.
I know. He's probably going to be really upset with me.
Yes, David will never talk to me again.
Well, did you guys know it's National Selfie Day and National Skateboarding Day?
No.
I did not.
Random, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's David Day.
Does he take... Oh, it's true. I guess he is kind of taking selfies.
He does. He's very vain, that day. He's not. What other technologies are you guys currently excited about right now? So we've talked about Ionic almost this whole time, but there's so much coming down the pipe in the web sphere. What are you guys pumped about in particular?
I'm really excited about CSS variables personally. I think that, I know it kind of goes back to Ionic, but I think that we may be able to integrate them and make the framework even better with CSS variables because currently we use Sass. I actually did like a little sample using CSS variables not too long ago, and I just think it will help out the framework a lot.
How do you feel about Sass? I've used Sass and Less for years, and just kind of recently I've taken a step back away from it and or started using its features less and less. I guess and specifically for my use case, I felt like the ability to create very, very specific selectors by like nesting things in Less and Sass was too tempting for people.
Yeah. So actually in our theming, we have a Sass linter that doesn't allow us to nest more than 3 times. I think 3 is the maximum. And for the most part in our code, we actually don't nest a lot because we want it to be able for our users or us to look at it and know what's going on. So we really just use Sass for the most part for the functions, the mixins, the Sass variables, like all of that stuff. And I think it's been really helpful in theming Ionic apps because you can basically just change one Sass map and just retheme your entire app. And so we've had a lot of, like, we have like a default theme and we have a dark theme, and it's just one Sass file that goes from default to dark.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That is definitely the upside of using something like Less or Sass.
Yeah.
The downside being, like I was saying, sometimes people get a little too excited with the nesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we're all guilty of that. But for sure, like we did make, Brandy and I have both made effort to not do that on purpose because we do want it to be, because this isn't just our app. This is something that people should be customizing. So we want to make sure our selectors were, for the most part, most of them, I would say, is just one selector so that people can just quickly override it.
Awesome. Adam, so what technologies are you currently excited about?
I'd have to say service workers. I think that's pretty cool. Just the ability to kind of handle network requests or lack thereof, and what should your app do in that instance. So that's just kind of a cool concept that we've never really had before. You've kind of just always thought, well, that's just how the web is. But now that you have this thought of like, well, hey, we can actually build these things that work offline, or what do I do in this scenario when this thing didn't download? It gives you a lot more control. And so like that's going to drastically help out Ionic 2 development and what developers are trying to pull off. And in, like we were saying earlier, but like getting into the progressive web app world and having those tiny file sizes and immediate startup times, it's all a win-win right now. So hopefully Apple can follow suit and implement it too.
I have one more question for you. Are you using RxJS anywhere in Ionic?
Well, I guess we're using observables through Angular 2. So does that count?
Yes.
Okay.
OK, Okay, that's good, because now I can like you. Before, okay. I was worried. Okay. I was really concerned.
All right, so absolutely, yes. I didn't know if this is a trick question or... yeah, we're using it quite heavily, I'd say. And we have a lot of our own custom events that we fire off, and a lot of our navigation, like how our pages go in and out, fire off observables of like that the users can subscribe and such. So quite heavily, I'd say.
Awesome. Just so you know, all my questions were trick questions today. just so you know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm finally catching on.
All right. Well, I'm super glad, Adam and Brandy, that you were able to take some time with us and get on the podcast. I'm looking forward to pairing on some stuff and really checking out the Ionic CLI. The CLI, honestly, CLIs are my favorite thing in the entire world. Rob Dodson, who's a developer advocate at Google, said that it's the year of the CLI, but you guys are ahead of the race since you've had it for a few years.
Yeah, that's right, because Polymer is making a CLI now too, right?
Right. Yeah, but you know, one of my goals actually was to try to get like the Polymer team to hang out with the other CLI people, and I really love cross collaboration, right? But I think everybody has their own opinions about what a CLI should be. So I mean, it's cool to see how Ember and Angular have collaborated and everything, but.
Developers with opinions? I don't know about that.
Yeah, everything's moving towards a more opinionated world. Okay, so you guys can follow Adam on Twitter. It's Adam D. Bradley.
Yep.
And Brandy is Brandy S. Carney on Twitter. And then Ben is at Ben Lesh. And I'm Tracy at Lady Leet. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you on the next podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. To find more podcasts, videos, and online conferences, check out modern-web.org or find us on Twitter at modernweb_. See you around the internet. Between the two friends are all of your friends and you.